Well, hello and welcome to today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. And I'm delighted that on today's show, we're going to look at a really important subject, which is Black maternal health. And I'm delighted to be joined by two experts and mums with lived experience to speak to us today. And they're from the fantastic organisation Five Times More, who are the UK's leading women's health organisation focused on Black maternal health, with a mission to empower, support and advocate for Black women. They ensure that they receive respectable, equitable and high quality care that we all deserve during pregnancy and beyond. And I should add that I came across Five Times More as an MP when I came across their fantastic advocacy and campaigning to highlight Black maternal health outcomes in the UK. And they have some really helpful resources and also work to train health professionals and lobby for change. So if I could introduce my two guests in the studio today, I have Tanuki, who is the co-founder of Five Times More. And she is also the founder of Mums and Tea, a social platform aimed at connecting Black mums together. And her co-founder is Chloe at Five Times More, which was named after the findings from the Embrace studies that Black women were five times more likely to die during pregnancy and childbirth than white women. She's also worked in different hospitals in London on the maternity unit and was an expert by experience working on the Ockenden report. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. And I can hear you're at a busy office today with London traffic noise. So hopefully we can hear each other for today's episode. But thank you so much for coming on to speak about this. I first came aware of the very shocking statistics that I just outlined in my introduction when I was in Parliament. And it'd be really interesting to hear from you both a bit more about the data around this. But also, I'd love to have a conversation about what we can do to support Black families who are about to give birth or have been through birth trauma. So perhaps, Tanuki, if I could start with you, and I'd love it if you could start by sharing off a bit of your personal experience about what led you to start campaigning on maternity and start to be more aware about these statistics in Black maternal health.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having us on today. In a nutshell, I was pregnant with my son in 2017. Gosh, that feels like such a long time ago now. But it was, the pregnancy was, you know, it's kind of up and down. I had loads of things happening within the pregnancy, but one of them was the fact that I had high blood pressure and protein in my urine. The signs were there right from the middle of my pregnancy, but actually nothing was done about it. I didn't have continuity of care. They clearly didn't seem to probably write it down properly in my notes, to the point where I was 38 weeks pregnant and I'd gone into the hospital, not the hospital, I'd gone into my final midwife appointment, and she took one look at me and was like, you need to go straight to the hospital. Like, I'm not even joking, your blood pressure is through the roof. Don't even go and get your hospital bag. Tell someone to go and get that. Like, go to the hospital. I'm so worried about you. I got to the hospital and they said, oh, you know, you're showing signs of preeclampsia. We're going to have to induce you and get this baby out. Like, it wasn't a discussion. I wasn't told any of my other options. It was just, you've got preeclampsia. We need to get this baby out. And of course, it's your first time. You kind of scaremongered into like just doing what they say. I didn't ask questions. I didn't know I had another option. But yeah, I was induced. And then I was told it will take 24 hours for the hormones to kick in. So just like kick back, relax. And, you know, it'll take a while. But a couple of hours later, what I now know to be contractions and being in labor started happening. And no one essentially believed me. Yeah, it wasn't a nice time, going into labor because I wasn't taken seriously when I told them I was in pain and I needed to be seen. It wasn't until my waters was broke and then they realized that I was very close to pushing that, the doctors came, saw baby's heart rate was dropping. Like, it was just so many things going on. But one thing and I say this all the time, I'll never forget the look of shock on the midwife's face when she realised, oh, she's been in labour this whole time. I ended up having an assisted delivery. It's not the end of the world, but it could have been avoided. I was so exhausted, I couldn't push. I just, by that point, I was just done, right? And again, not the end of the world, but it didn't need to happen. If someone had just listened to me and I was, you know, given appropriate pain relief and all of that kind of stuff, it was like a snowball effect. And I remember leaving the hospital being like really grateful for my baby, but feeling like I didn't matter. And that like I spoke up, but nobody gave a heck, basically. And so, yeah, that was my experience of giving birth. I was running Mums in Tea at the time. I still do run Mums in Tea. It was just a way to, I was the first one out of my friends to have a baby and I didn't want to be alone. So I just got mums together. Essentially, I was really passionate about her. That's how I met this one, and I stalked her on social media, and she can tell you the rest of the story. But at that time, I was building a really strong network of like mothers, and we would get together. You know what new mothers are like. They're just talking about their experiences. Everyone's always like, so what was your labor like? What was your labor like? So I was hearing this all the time, and I can't think of one single time where someone was like, oh my God, I had a great experience. I had a great labor. Everything went fine. It was always something traumatic. It was always something, you know, just really scary, like sepsis or like a missed infection or again, emergency C-section, just not being taken seriously. That recurring theme of pain not being taken seriously was a really big thing. And I realized something was going on. So yeah, that's how we kind of came about it. In 2018, so the year after, that's when I heard the stats that Black women were 5 times more likely to die in pregnancy, childbirth, and the 6-week period. So I was like, oh, well, that figures, you know, I'm not shocked because of everything I was hearing in my community of like mums and their experiences. So, yeah, then the year after, I became pregnant with my daughter. And I was like, yeah, this isn't happening. This is not going to happen again. So that's why I'm going to say I stalked her. She's going to say I stalked her.
She does.
But yeah, I found Chloe on social media as part of like my network. We'd spoken a few times before then, but I was like, hey, why don't we do an event? This is really bad. And I was like, let's meet up. And yeah, I guess the rest is history, but she can take over from what that experience was like.
And Chloe, at the time, I think I'm right in saying that you were running an organisation called Prosperities, supporting ethnic women during the perinatal stage. So explain what happened when Tanuki reached out to you.
Yes, so I actually knew about her because of her organisation called Mums in Tea. And she also used to do mummy boxes. So a well-being box. If you're a new mum, she used to do well-being boxes for the new mums, which had like so savage, I was really nice things. So I used to support her work from there. So when she contacted me to say, let's have a one-off event.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, you did. When she contacted me to say, let's have one-off event to raise awareness. I was like, yeah, let's do it. Because I worked in a maternity at the time. She had a mum. We just wanted to raise awareness and let mums know, okay, yes, the statistics are awful, but this is what you can do. And in doing so, 5 times more was actually birth. So it wasn't supposed to be 5 times more. It was supposed to be a one-off thing, but it happened and I'm so grateful for it. So the first thing we did was our PSA video. We got a few people to say, I am 5 times more and go like this. And then that went viral and that's how our campaign actually started.
And for listeners who are less aware of those statistics, could you just talk a bit about Embrace and why is it, do you think, that Black women do have higher and worse outcomes in maternity care?
Okay, so when we started in 2018, the Embrace report. So Embrace, it looks at all the deaths in the UK and morbidities as well in the UK. It comes out every, I was going to say October, sometime ago from November or December.
Annually,
and it's 2 years old. So it's data from 2 years previously. And you can find it online, it's easy to access. And it talks about the deaths, so which ones were the number one death. So when COVID was around, COVID was always one of the three. So it's always blood clots, COVID.
I think cardiac arrest.
Yeah. And suicide.
And then mental health and suicide comes up. So when it comes to mental health, suicide is the number one killer for women. And on there, you see all the deaths in the UK. One thing I must say, the UK is still one of the safest places to give birth. There's just a disparity in who is dying, and it seems to be black women, but we want to make sure that women who are listening know that it's still one of the safest places to give birth. So NBRH has all the data and why women are dying, cardiac arrest, etc. And it's what information and advice and what you should do and what you should look out for. So when that came out and we wanted to do something about it, 2019, I think it was still five times more. Then it did slightly go down. And now 2024, which is last year, it was 2.9 times more. So this year, when it comes out in November, hopefully we'll find out if this, the statistic has gone up again or it's gone down.
Just a note on that as well. I feel like for us, we looked at that and saw that there was just a huge disparity. We don't account for a lot of births at all. We count for a very small number of births, yeah, in the whole of the UK. But yet, at the time of starting, being five times more likely to die, that in itself, like, I'm not great at maths. That was literally my worst subject ever. But you don't have to be a genius at maths to realise there's something clearly very sinister going on if you don't account for a number of births, but yet the five times more likely to die in comparison to your white counterparts. And we knew that the state of maternity is not great, you know, like, you don't just have to be black to have a bad experience. So many white women, so many women of all races are having very, very bad and poor experiences. But in doing our research, we saw that this wasn't a new thing. This wasn't the first time this has happened. This disparity has been going on for decades. It's been going on for such a long time now. I think it was just 2018. Maryam Knight, who is the author of NBRH and her team, put it at the forefront of the lay summary to highlight to people that this is actually a thing and this is going on. But in previous reports, it was there, and I guess it was known amongst health professionals. And if you're in that world, you might know about it, but I think with Marion putting it front and center and it, like, you know, being in the news and people catching on to it and just becoming more in the social sphere, that's why people started talking about it more. Definitely why we wanted to get together and be like, look, this is awful. We clearly know he works in a hospital. I've got the, you know, the anecdotal experiences and stuff and our personal experiences. There's something clearly going on. And why? Well, this is why we exist, because we want to get to the bottom of it and try to actually change it. Hence why we do a number of things in different realms and areas with mothers, with MPs, with health professionals, to make sure we're hitting at all levels.
I was going to say, so if you look at NBRH, a lot of deaths are very preventable as well. And some are because they've got coexisting, pre-existing conditions that they have. But one thing also is the deaths are happening after pregnancy. So it's not during pregnancy, it's not during labour, it's after the 6-week period. That's where most women are dying from. So a lot of women think, okay, I have my baby, I'm fine. No, that's a crucial time. Once you had your baby is when you need to be more aware of some of the symptoms and the signs.
Well, I think just for listeners as well, I think it's really important just to look at those stats. So I've put in the podcast show notes a link to the recent NBRH report, but the one from 2020 to 2022, which recently came out, said that white women had a statistic of 13.6 deaths per 100,000 births. But if you compare that with black women, it was 31 for every 100,000. So this seems really important to have that data. So can I just ask you both then, you just mentioned there, Chloe, about the really important first couple of weeks post-birth. And firstly, is there anything that families listening to the show should be aware of, symptoms to be looking out with relations to birth trauma that you'd like to signpost them to or to start thinking about?
I always say I think women need to be clued up. Don't go in there without being clued up. And I know you can also be clued up, but then because pregnancy is such a vulnerable time, you might not know what to do. But I think women need to be clued up. And if you can't be completely clued up, let your birthing partner or your family members be clued up. Let them know what's going on. Let them know your plan. Because as a first-time mum, you don't know what to expect. I remember myself as a first-time mum, I did not know what to expect. You just don't know. But being clued up and knowing your body, really knowing your body will really, really help. And another thing is knowing your history. a lot of us may not plan our pregnancy. I remember we used to do a lot of work on preconception, and it said that I think about 45 women plan their pregnancy.
45%.
But 45% of women plan their pregnancy. So once you do become pregnant, make sure you learn, you know your body, you learn, you ask your family members the history. Like I said, coexisting conditions are 50% of the reason why women are dying. So those are a few of the more important things. Mm. There are important resources, and I'm going to plug our app. We have a app called the 5x More Learning Hub, which you can find on the App Store and Android, which has information on pregnancy, what to expect when you're expecting, who the health professional is. Every time we talk to a woman, she'll say, oh, I spoke to the nurse. During maternity, you're either speaking to the doctor or midwife. Sometimes I'm like, who is the nurse? And then there's a health visitor that you might speak to, or GP is telling women who's who and what their roles are.
And I was looking at your website in preparation for today's show. And the thing that really struck me as one of your really helpful downloadable resources was the 6 steps to advocate for yourself during pregnancy. And I was really struck by your point about speaking up. And I think a lot of us, you know, it was my first baby, not always sure what your rights are. I think you see somebody in a white coat who's a doctor or a nurse, and you automatically just follow exactly what they say. But I think you're both making a really important point to speak up for yourself. And if you're not able to do so as the pregnant mum giving birth in labour, then to have that advocate for you there as well who can do that on your behalf. So could you just tell them a bit about their 6 steps to advocate for themselves and anything that you guys recommend?
So the 6 steps are, one of them is trust your gut. Actually, I'll try and do them in order. Speak up is, like you said, number one. We've put that one there because, like you said, so many people are maybe have white coat syndrome and they know something's going on with them. But because a doctor or a midwife has said, you know, X, Y, and Z, they might just, or maybe has maybe gaslit them. They might just think, oh, okay, maybe the doctor's right. I'm just overreacting or something, you know. So speak up if you feel like something is just not right. Nobody knows your body better than you. So speak up if you literally feel like something is wrong. And if you need a second opinion, that kind of thing. So yeah, that's one of the 6 steps. I think the other one is...
Turned in order.
Yeah.
I think trust your gut, brunette.
Trust your gut, yeah. Nobody knows your body better than you. So that kind of goes hand in hand with speaking up, because you trust your gut, and then you speak up if you feel like something just isn't right. We have find an advocate. Mm-hmm. So that is to do with making sure you have an advocate who's clued up about pregnancy, childbirth, and what to expect, who maybe can speak up on your behalf if you are in a vulnerable position and can't do so as well. So it could be a mum, it could be a friend, it could be a partner, it could be someone that you trust. The next one we have is
I can say document everything. I know it's not in order. Make sure you document everything. Medication has been given to you or not given to you, make sure it's been written down by yourself, but also ask the health professional to write it down. So if you want something and they say no, let them write it down and the reason behind it as well. I also think it's nice sometimes to go away and read things over. So that's another thing. But also you want to know your rights. So if you know you want a C-section and they say no, and then you go home, you're able to find out what your rights are. Another one is you can seek a second opinion. Something I did not know. And that's part of knowing your rights. If the health professional doesn't want to offer you any support, you can always ask for a different health professional. I know sometimes we don't want to be blacklisted and feel like if we ask for a different health professional or somebody else will be difficult, but we're not. Another one is...
The last one,
since you said all of it, is use trusted websites. Not just Google and TikTok and Instagram. There's nice.com, nice.org, I think it is, NHS and patient... safety as well. You can go on those websites to find out all the information you need to find. NICE is a really, really good one, because that's what all health that's what all hospitals are supposed to use. That's like their guidelines. So it's great to use NICE for any information that you want during a pregnancy. There's other organisations like AIMS. AIMS is really good. They've been around for a very, very long time. And then there's Birthrights as well.
And all of those links for anyone listening to the show are in our show notes today. So do take a look at those resources. And Claire, I was really struck by what you were just saying about women not knowing their rights and having a better understanding in advance about risks. So if we just go back a bit to pregnancy, what do you think women should be preparing for during birth? And we had a very interesting conversation in the previous series with dads. And we had a special episode where they talked a bit about birth plans and how the dad should be a bit more involved. Do you have any advice for Black women as well who are pregnant on what they should be thinking about during those sort of last few weeks?
Definitely a birth plan. I won't say I had a birth plan. I didn't know what my options were. So I remember the midwife saying, where would you like to give birth? And I was like, hospital, where else? Thinking, you only give birth in a hospital. I didn't know there's such thing as home birth. I didn't know there was a pool birth. I just thought you just go to hospital and give birth. I didn't know there was even a birth centre at the hospital for births that are not high risk. So I think making sure you know the type of births and the type of birth that you want and the type of birth that you're able to have. Because if you are high risk, there's certain births that you can't have. So understanding and making sure you know. But like you said on dads, we have 5 recommended steps for birthing partners that we made with dads because we really want dads to be involved. Dads are your eyes and your ears during pregnancy. Pregnancy is such a vulnerable time and you need that extra support, that advocate. But generally for women, I say know the types of births you're allowed to have. Don't just go in there thinking there's only one type of birth, or, you know, listening to what one of your friends has said and said, okay, this is the way I should do it. Making sure that you know what's right for you.
Yeah. And just to add to that, actually, we've done loads of surveys and things over the years to find out about Black women's experiences. And one of the things that comes up all the time is that they don't actually know what their options are. So they can't make informed decisions. So it does, you know, following on from what you said, is making sure you know exactly what is out there so you can make the best decision for yourself and make informed decisions. So like in my case, I wasn't entirely sure about an induction. I felt almost coerced to just have it without it the risks being explained to me or without understanding what that could be for myself. I feel like maybe if I had have known, I could have potentially made a different decision, who knows. But you need to know, you know, what are the potential outcomes that can happen, and that should kind of be in your birth plan as well. What could potentially happen, and, you know, how can I make sure that I'm as informed about this as possible so I can make a great decision?
Be flexible with your birth plan as well. Make sure you're flexible. I think a lot of us are not flexible. I supposed to have a vaginal delivery. I had a forceps delivery with my second son. I wasn't expecting it. I didn't even know what a forceps delivery was. It was such a scary process. I think if I knew what it was, it'd be great. But sometimes we're like, okay, I'm going to have a pool birth, and that's it. We don't prepare for other things. So making sure if birth plan A doesn't go right, you've got a B and a C.
Well, I totally agree with that. And for anyone who's read my book, I think I talked about almost throwing my birth plan out the window because everything I'd written in it ended up being the opposite. So I do think that's a really important point. And for anyone listening to the show who is pregnant, you may not be aware that you can also ask for a tour of your local maternity unit. So I had a tour in my hospital of the midwifery and birthing centre. I also got to see where the labour ward was. And I think it just slightly helps to put your mind at ease to kind of have a sense of the space where you might be and what the different options are. So that's really good advice.
When I needed help after my birth trauma, Erwin Mitchell's team of experts provided the support I needed to rebuild my life.
At Erwin Mitchell, we work closely with our clients through any challenges. We understand the impact of a birth injury and can help get the best medical support and rehabilitation for our clients and their families. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
And you also talked there about knowing a bit more as a pregnant mum, but I think we also have such a focus on pregnancy that I don't think we educate women enough about post-birth particularly on mental and physical health and recovery that they might need post having their baby. So could we talk a bit about the challenges that Black mums might face post-delivery, particularly with mental health support? And is there anything that you recommend for anyone seeking psychological help?
We've seen through some past data that the prevalence of mental health issues is higher in Black mothers. But I don't think we're necessarily seeking the right support for it because a number of different reasons. Breaking the taboos is one of them. That might be something we just don't discuss culturally. Religion plays a part. You know, sometimes you just leave the hospital and think, well, thank God I've had my baby. I'm just going to get on with it. And without realizing there are things like baby blues, postnatal depression, postnatal anxiety, intrusive thoughts, all of these things that can happen. Your hormones are so out of whack and you know, all over the place that you don't realize, if it's not been explained to you, you might just think, right, it's just me, I'm just going through it, maybe I just need to pray and I'll be fine. And or maybe you do go to seek help and you know you don't necessarily get it because, you know, we come across as a strong Black woman, a lot of stereotypes there. So there's a lot of different things that are going on postpartum, especially for women who look like me.
I was going to add, there's a lack of awareness. I think we just don't know. I don't think it's spoken about enough. If you're in the maternity world, you know about all of this. But if you're not, I'm just thinking about my own two experiences. I don't know about you. I don't ever remembering accessing any support. And I remember the midwife and the GP and the health visitor saying, are you okay? And I said, yes, because you're only asking me if you're okay. The questions weren't deep enough for me to open up. But imagine seeing different health professionals every time you go for an appointment. I'm never going to open up. And then the appointments feel so rushed. And then postnatally, it's about your child. Let's be honest, when the health visitor comes to your house, is, are you okay, mum? Yeah. How's the child feeding? How's the child sleeping? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? It's never about you. So any emotion, any feelings you have, it's not about you. But even now, as women, we invest in everybody else but ourselves. So during pregnancy, if a newborn, we're still not going to invest in ourselves. There needs to be more awareness. And then the lack of us speaking to each other. So if Tanuka gives birth and I feel like she's doing great, and then I'm just gonna think, is there me problems? I'm gonna feel like I'm just doing it wrong. If she's doing it great, why am I struggling? So we start comparing ourselves to what we see to what people show us on the outside, but we don't know what's going on deep down. So I do think we need to start talking more and being really honest with our thoughts. I'm happy that there's some sort of awareness now, we're talking now, but I do think we need to do it a bit more because we're making it look easy. Let's be honest. A lot of people making it very easy. I remember during my pregnancy and I was like, okay, I have to go back to work. I have to do this. So I went back to work and I went back to uni. And I was like, I'm going to do this because I thought that's what everyone did. They had a baby and just got on with it because that's what I saw.
I so agree with everything you're saying. And the exact reason we set up this podcast was to break the taboo by speaking about it. Because I think you're so right, Chloe. I mean, we tend to, I think, look after the pregnant mum in society and then the newborn baby. And I think we tend to forget that there's, you know, a second patient post-birth and that's the mum and she needs to have help and support too. And one of the big things that I campaigned on as a then MP was exactly your point about the GP appointment. I think I remember my entire appointment was about 15 minutes and the entire appointment was about my daughter, who was absolutely fine. And it was me who'd had the traumatic birth. And I think there was a one word sort of question at the end saying, you know, do you have postnatal depression? Yes or no. And by the way, you have 1 minute left to answer the question. And I just think that's crazy. So I'm so pleased that the government is changing that as a result of my campaign and introducing a question now about mum's physical and mental health in addition to the baby, because it's so important that we do ask you. But I think you're making a really important point as well about the kind of stigma and shame, particularly around mental health, that people feel that they can't ask. So if anyone's listening today who thinks that they need help, but they don't feel confident to pick up the phone or to ask, what would you like to say to them?
I just wanted to know it's normal. It's normal. We are all going through it. During pregnancy and after, we have to remember during pregnancy as well, you might have the intrusive thought. Tocophobia is a real thing, to feel giving birth. we met a woman, actually I met a woman the other day, and she was like, please don't think I'm silly, but I'm scared to give birth. And I was like, there's actually something called tocophobia and women who fear giving birth. So just speak up and talk to someone. You'd be surprised to know that we're all going through it and have gone through it.
I guess for me, it would be, especially for women in our community. I'm not saying everybody's religious, but quite a few people in our community, maybe. And there might just be this pressure to, oh, do you know what, just pray. Maybe you're not praying enough or something like that. Or family members being like, oh, you're not the first, you know, everybody's given birth before you and they've been fine. And so there's that like extra added pressure that, oh gosh, maybe I just need to pray. Maybe I just, you know, I'm not as strong as my mum. I need to just be stronger. And that's not okay. It's okay to actually say, do you know what? Yeah, I can pray, but I can also still get help too. Like the two don't have to be separate. Like you can do both. So yeah, it would be to like, you know, speak up and have that confidence, like Toi said, to just admit that actually I don't think I'm okay, and seeing where that can take you is a level of vulnerability that maybe you haven't experienced before.
I was going to say, don't dismiss your feelings.
Yeah, but don't dismiss them, because it can have a really, like a really hard knock-on effect for the rest of your time.
Another one is, as much as I don't really like AI, there are some AI apps that can help. If you have no one to speak to, or you're too embarrassed to speak to someone, there are some AI apps that can help you. If you just say how you feel, and they can be like, okay, this is how you feel, this is where you should seek support. I don't want to say any names, so I don't want to sponsor them, but there are things out there that could help you if you have no one to speak to, or you feel like maybe it's me just going crazy, or this is unreal. There are things that could tell you, you know, your feelings are valid, please go and seek help.
And I think what I'm hearing from both of you throughout this episode is just the importance of speaking up and asking for help, whether it's during pregnancy or during labour or post-birth. It's so important to advocate for yourself and to ask for help. And if you know anyone who is struggling, then do signpost them some of the resources that we've talked about today.
I was just about to say, that's really important as well, because as much as we are putting the emphasis on the mums to speak up and all of that kind of thing, the family, the friends, people will genuinely notice. And if it's a question, oh, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And then you just move on without actually like, okay, but how are you really? Like, you've just had a baby, things are going on. Like, are you like, how are you feeling? That could actually try and help people be a bit more open, rather than just the throwaway, like standard, are you okay? And then just moving on. So friends and family also play a part in that.
I was going to say, notice behaviours. So if she's normally quiet, but now after having the baby, she's doing the most, notice that. Is that normal of her to do? You know, or is she normally loud and she's quiet? I know a lot of people, when it comes to mental health, we kind of mask it by being too present, by always smiling, by being that go-getter. You just had a baby and you're going shopping, you're doing this, you're doing that. Notice that behavior. Don't think, oh, she's coping really well. Just really look at and think to yourself, is this normal?
What's their normal?
Yes, definitely.
And you've just reminded me something, Chloe, from we did an earlier episode in the previous series on postpartum psychosis, and one of the charities talked in it a great deal about the symptoms that mums exhibit with that. And it just reminds you about your really terrible statistic that you shared at the beginning about maternal suicide and how high the risk is post-birth. So if we could just talk about that for a moment. It's not something I don't think we talk about enough in society, and it's one of the most shocking statistics that I heard during the birth trauma inquiry in Parliament. So looking after mums' mental health is incredibly important post-birth to reduce suicide rates. So is there any advice that you'd have for families who are worried about this?
I think it's a hard one, I'll be completely honest, especially if you're a Black woman, because sometimes, as much as we're saying speak up, what we've seen in, you know, the research and stuff, some people are genuinely scared to speak up, especially when it comes to mental health, because they don't want their baby to get taken away, or they don't want social services to get involved because they feel like, oh, I can't cope, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. So that's also a very real thing and a real worry for a lot of parents, that we completely understand where that comes from too.
I think that's such an important point. And I think there does seem to be a cultural stigma in the UK and around the world about asking for help with psychological issues. But I do think it's really important that mums get treated early on. And if I could just share a story from Stafford, you know, we have a mother and baby unit in my former constituency. And some of these mothers had, you know, a real psychotic break post-birth, but have recovered incredibly well by having specialist treatment. So it's about asking for help and getting that specialist care. Although that does lead us on to an important point about the government providing that level of care across the UK. And our headline finding in the inquiry was that there was a postcode lottery in maternity care. So could I ask you both about the black maternal stats across Britain? And specifically, why do you think it is that we do have these inequalities in health outcomes for black mums in this country?
Oh, okay. Well, there's more than one reason behind it. There's so many. I'll say a few and I think we can go back and forth from them. The main one is, for me, I think the stereotypes when it comes to black women being able to handle pain. There's that book that was published, is it 2015?
A nursing textbook, yeah.
A nursing textbook, which was published in 2012, sorry. And it told you how to administer pain depending on ethnicity. And when it said talked about black people, it talked about black people can handle pain more. Now, that book was taken off in 2017. That was less than 10 years ago. It was a big report on BBC, but that's a nursing book that people were using. There was another report that was done in 2019, I would say. Half of white medical students and doctors believe that black people felt less pain.
And they were less likely to administer pain relief because of that.
Can you imagine? So these are some of the stereotypes that we face. I also think there's loads of barriers when it comes to us being informed a lot of the time it's, well, they're from a low economic background, so they don't know what to do, how to do it. I remember when I used to work in maternity, some of the things I will hear is, you know, black people have smaller houses, so they're not gonna want to have a home birth. Asian people have loads of their extended family in the house, so they can't have the home birth because the house is really full up, and that's not how it can't work that way. So I think for me, it's loads of these stereotypes and these myths that is this within culture, and the stereotypes that people have of us doesn't help us at all. Another one is the system doesn't work for us. So if I have a injury, or if I think I have a rash and I call 111 or go and see my GP and they ask me something like, is it red? I don't go red.
Or you turn it blue.
Or you turn it blue. Are the lips purple? It doesn't happen. So if I say no, you're going to say I'm fine, but I'm not fine. My friend's daughter nearly died because they asked her, the lips were turning blue, and it just didn't turn blue. And luckily enough, she brought her daughter A&E because she was like, I'm just going to bring her to A&E. She's just not breathing. But if she didn't, her daughter would have been dead. And so the system needs to work for us. You can go back to diabetes, the type of food that we eat. So they will say to us, oh, don't eat this type of food. We're not eating that type of food. What about the food that we are eating? So culturally, the system doesn't work for us.
It's not culturally sensitive.
It's not culturally sensitive at all.
Yeah. We spoke about all of these things in our TED talk, actually.
Yeah.
There's so many different examples. And yeah, quick cheeky plug, if you haven't watched our TED talk, we gave one in January, which is amazing. It's on the website. I'm sure we can link that too. But all of these examples you've given are exactly right. And another one just to flag is that stereotype of, you know, oh, this happens because they're from a low socioeconomic background and because they're all poor and, you know, whatever. Which even if that was the case, is no excuse, because if you know that's why this is happening, there should be targeted interventions to make sure that that doesn't happen. But we found from our research, so we did the Black Maternity Experiences report in
2022 was a launch.
Yeah, we launched our report in 2022, and we're launching another one in the next few months. We found that despite all of the stereotypes, black women that filled out our survey were and above the national average, were degree level educated and more, and were actually in relationships, because it's this stereotype, oh, they're single mothers. It's not young. Always the case. They're young. And we found that despite all of that, Black women are still having very, very bad experiences. So we wanted to uncover what was going on behind the stats, what the people that live to tell the tale, what's going on with them. And you find so many terrible assumptions, attitudes, knowledges from the health professionals, despite the fact that people are well educated, are in a position to, you know, speak up and speak out for themselves. That's why we have all of these other measures, because some people actually do feel confident to speak up, but they're shut down. So what are some other things they can do? That's why we have so many steps. That's why, you know, we have so many resources, because it's just a myriad of reasons, and it can become, you know, quite overwhelming. But this is why we exist, because we want to tackle it.
I think that's a really good time to ask you both my question that I ask every podcast guest, which is, if the Prime Minister or Health Secretary was listening to today's show, what would be the number one policy change or thing that you'd like government to do to reduce these terrible statistics in Black maternal health and improve maternity care?
What would be yours?
You're taking your time on the target. Because the current government said that they were going to put a target to Black women dying, and we're still waiting to hear concrete evidence on what they're going to do and what those steps are going to be. They've been in power for quite a long time. At this point, we had a debate for our awareness week just back in, was it May?
Yeah, April, May. April.
And again, it's, you know, they're not quite answering the question. We don't still have a date. We still don't have concrete numbers. We don't know what's going on with that. And it feels just like, is this important to you? Is this part of your agenda still? Is this something you want to do? And if so, why is it taking so long in comparison to all the other things that, you know, you said you were going to do? So it would be to maybe, you know, do what you said you're going to do in a timely manner. Bit cheeky, but...
I don't know what mine will be. Yeah, I just think they just need to take women's health seriously. I don't know what policy that would be. I don't think they take women's health seriously at all. So not even not even the maternity. I just don't think they take women's health seriously. And to think that women bring life to the world and you're not taking anything to do with us seriously. So it will be a policy around there, but I can't even pick which one because there's too many. But possibly it will be around, there needs to be more time when it comes to maternity appointments. It's just too rushed. You don't feel that connection. You can't, by the time you sit down, you're getting back up. It's just so rushed. I don't know what kind of policy that could be, but 15 minutes is just not good enough.
Well, I very much agree with everything you guys have just said. And your point there, Chloe, about women's health. I mean, I remember when I was a politician, I was amazed to discover it was only in 2022 that we had the very first women's health strategy ever published by a government. And I just assumed it had been an annual report and was amazed to discover it was the very first time that there'd been a dedicated strategy. And I think it goes to the heart of kind of why Parliament also needs to modernise, to have, you know, more women, people like myself who'd had a young baby, so that we start talking about these issues in the Chamber of the House of Commons, because it does have such an impact on our democracy. And I wrote a whole chapter about that in my book for exactly that point, that I think we do need to have a more representative Parliament. And I'm afraid we're coming to the end of the episode. So my last question for both of you is just a really practical one, which is, obviously, apart from the fantastic website 5x More, which I've added to the show notes today, is there any specific advice or particular resource that you would like to signpost listeners today to, and that they should be aware of? And Tanuki, let me start with you.
I would definitely say all of the, you know, those trusted sources that we said before, because it's very easy to speak to friends, family, go on TikTok and get other people's experiences, but going onto trusted websites and using trusted sources is so important when you're trying to get that research and become informed. So yeah, I would say stick to the trusted resources. It's good to, you know, there's a balance between wanting to keep yourself, you know, in a positive space. But sometimes friends and family might not have the best things to say about pregnancy because they want to talk about their experiences, which is fine, I understand. But just making sure you're going on to websites that actually are, you know, have been validated and gone through a rigorous process so you know what to expect is probably the best thing to do.
And not just Dr. Google, is what I always say people not to do. Brilliant. That's very good advice. And Chloe?
Okay, I think I have three. The first is Maternal Mental Health Alliance, then the Mental Health Organisation. And on there, they have loads of different mental health organisations which you can get in touch with that offer support. Another one is Tommy's. We actually have a partnership with Tommy's. It's called the Black and Brown Helpline. So if you are pregnant and you have any concerns, you can call the helpline. But also if you're not white, you can also call the helpline. They've got another helpline for you. And I think everyone should use that helpline. There's midwives on the other side who can support you within your pregnancy on anything pregnancy related. And if you've gone through a birth trauma, you need support. Through that helpline, they can put you through Petals, which we have a partnership with, and get free counselling and support for you and your partner. So I'll definitely say use those up if you need to.
Well, that's incredibly useful to have those specific resources. Well, can I thank you both so much for coming on Breaking the Taboo today? And it was so powerful to hear about the incredibly useful advice that you had for families listening to the show, but also to talk a bit about the data that's out there on Black maternal health and to really challenge the government, I think, to do something about it. So let's hope that the Prime Minister and Number 10 are listening to today's show and are going to take some action on improving maternity care. And if you've been enjoying Breaking the Taboo, then please do rate us on Spotify or iTunes. Please do share this episode with friends, family or colleagues. We're very much here to support you. And we do read your comments and suggestions for topics on the episode. So please do send in via social media or my website any ideas that you have for future topics on the show. So thank you to my two guests for coming in. And thank you for breaking the taboo by speaking about Black maternal health. Tune in next week for our next episode of the podcast. Thank you.